Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner with me. I'm Sam Minter, and I've got Isanbo with me, and it is Monday, February 11th, 2013, at least UTC it is, and we're here for another show.
We're here for another show, and we're here like at the right time.
This is our regularly scheduled time for once. Yeah, right. It's the first time in like years,
weeks,
years.
I don't know. Can't remember.
Yeah, long time. And you guys may be able to tell. It sounds like I'm losing my voice a little.
Yeah.
Bit. Yeah. I have not been completely 100% healthy since before Christmas, and I thought I was pretty much out of the woods and blah blah blah, and then all of a sudden this weekend I start the cough starts getting worse again, and before it was always a dry cough, now it's a cough that's like gunk is actually coming out, and my voice is starting to sound weird, and I'm like, what the hell?
That's no good.
Yeah, I mean, and it's like, come on, I've been sick for like a month and a half, and that's like the cold flu kind of stuff. You know, I also had the kidney stone thing going on in the middle of all that, and it's and then before that, I was sick in September and October, so I had a few weeks off in November from being sick, but otherwise, I've in one way, shape, or another, aside from a couple weeks in November, felt like crap since September. I'm like, this is not cool.
Is it the weather up there, do you think? The season?
I don't know. No, I think that there have been various things going around, and I can't blame the kidney stones on any of that kind of stuff, but, you know.
No.
And it's like, you know, and I must say, I said I feel like shit, but it's not really feeling like shit. It's like, and most of the time, I've been at 70-80% normal, you know? So it's not been sick enough that I'm staying home from work. It's not, you know, I'm lying in bed all the time. It's just I'm coughing and it just doesn't go away. You know, it's just a pain in the ass.
Well, I gotta admit, I'm knocking on wood right now that I've been other than, I don't know, about a week ago that I got this migraine headache on Wednesday. I've been pretty, I thought I was getting a flu or something or whatever, and I was actually grateful that it was just a migraine. Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I was worried. I'm oh my God, I'm gonna get the baby sick. Oh boy, geez. And I'm but no, but it did last me for a number of days. I was not feeling. I mean, I kept feeling a dull headache for days afterwards until it finally just subsided and just went away.
Yeah, and this is the thing with this. It's especially sucks because it's in that middle zone.
Yeah.
I mean, not being completely sick doesn't suck worse, but
get all full blown and then you're over it. You're just dragging and feeling crap halfway all the time. Yeah, it's just the worst.
Yeah, annoying. Anyway, we've got a good show for you coming up. Well, yeah, we'll see if it's good or not.
Well, I don't know. We'll see. All I know is that I was talking to Sam right now, and I keep it. You know, I've done a whole bunch of Google searches to see if there's some racket of people putting up fake profiles of naked girls and just trying to get people to subscribe.
Oh, here we go with the Facebook naked girls again.
Dude, I mean, no, this is I'm telling you. Now it's suggesting me a girl from Bulgaria. I was telling Sam, it's suggesting me as a friend, right? You know, it says, I clicked on the profile, right? Because I'm the name is even in Cyrillic letters. Yeah, I can't even type the freaking stuff. I mean, not for nothing, but you want to talk about suggestive. One of the pictures is a girl licking a banana. I'm like, really? Could you just be a little bit more over the top? I'm like, I don't know.
The girl needs to eat. She likes bananas.
I guess, yes.
You know, a banana is a healthy fruit.
Yes. According to her profile, she really loves those damn bananas. Yes. I'm like, what the? So I'm just, of course, there's been all these articles recently talking about Facebook fatigue.
Uh-huh.
And, just the fact that, there was actually, that's one article that I didn't mention, something that I saw, talking about a whole bunch of teenagers figuring out, heaven forbid, that, oh shit, that stuff all stays and everybody can see it? Well, fuck, then, like, now everybody, now you got this whole group of, a lot of people that are just very carefully, like, you know, manicuring their Facebook.
Yeah, well, I mean, one thing we haven't talked about, and we didn't have this on our agenda, but I guess we might as well, is Facebook's rolling out the search, the new social search right. graph thing, where you can tell it queries like, you know, give me any of my friends who used to live in Buffalo and like fish, or whatever, you know? And these are very powerful, and of course, unless people have been careful about their privacy settings, in general, a lot more things are public than most people are aware of.
Right.
And so you can find out all kinds of things about people. And so there are example websites that have been, you know, set up, you know, people who are married who like affairs, you know, or whatever, you know.
Well, there is one of those that's like Ashley Madison that got rejected for a Super Bowl ad, but
It was Ashley Madison. I saw the example of it. It was people who are married who like Ashley Madison and something other, blah, blah, blah. And you bring up a bunch of, and for those who don't know, Ashley Madison is a company that specializes in like setting up affairs for people or something.
Correct. Yeah. Yes. If you're married and you want to have an affair with somebody else who is married, there's your website.
Yeah, it's like a dating site for married people.
Yes. It's, you know, hey, it's a concept. You got to give them credit.
Anyway, and they're making money, I guess. But
they're making money. I mean, they were going to buy a Super Bowl ad. I was shocked. I was like, really?
Those ain't cheap.
There's that much money into this?
Anyway, but the point is, there's a lot of stuff out there, and I've heard there's someone at work who mentioned to me that they have exactly done what you just said. They've spent like hours sitting down in Facebook, going back over their history, deleting shit.
Yeah,
and it's like,
and they were talking about this surge right now in this application, which I haven't seen, called Snapchat, where you know, now you can
explain what it is. Yep.
The Snapchat, you can send somebody a picture, a video, or something, and the content self-destructs.
Yes. Okay. In theory, there are ways around it.
There are ways around that. Okay. That's one of the things I was looking. I kept thinking, there's got to be a way around it.
Well, think about this. They put in protection, so like, there's nothing stopping you from taking a screenshot, but it'll notify the person at the other end that you took a screenshot.
Okay.
But you know, if you just think about the security, worst case scenario, someone gets another camera and takes a picture of it.
Right.
You know, or whatever.
But
you know,
most people are lazy.
Well, of course. The point is, and I'm sure there were some holes that I'm sure they've patched up where they found, you know, if you jailbroken your phone and look at the file, actually, you don't even need to jailbroken the phone. If you use a utility to look at the file system of your phone, they were not cleaning up everything they were supposed to clean up, and you could get some of the stuff that way too. The point with all of these things is, yes, if you use it as intended, it self-destructs and goes away, and so people can feel free to send pictures that they otherwise wouldn't because they're worried about them sticking around. So of course, you know, it's labeled as the quick ephemeral pictures, but of course it's used for sexting, you know, but the reality is, yes, if you play by the rules, these things are temporary, but there are always ways around the rules. The bottom line on anything, and we've said this on privacy before, you know, if you don't want something public, it shouldn't exist.
Well, based on almost all those half-naked pictures I just saw, people, if you don't want anybody to see you naked, don't send it anywhere. And take a picture of it with a digital camera or any camera, actually.
Any camera. I mean, you know, if you don't want pictures of you naked on the internet, never take off your clothes.
Right.
And that's about it.
I mean, if I go, you know, let's face it, Sam has shit on the internet where there's pictures of me. Like, I mean, there's stuff, there's my email address, there's everything. I don't give a fuck anymore. I mean, whatever, do whatever they want, but it is what it is. I mean, if you go put my name in, I mean, so much crap comes up anyway. I mean, you just type in my name. Every hit number one, number two, the third hit, the images, all the first images that come out in Google search are all mine, okay?
Yeah.
Ancestry.com's right. Executive profile. My corporation shows up right there. That I'm on the board of the condo association, so I'm registered to corporation. I mean, everything. I mean, so
But look, even if you and I obviously have put stuff out there for a lot longer than other folks, but even if you've sort of jealously guarded your stuff, I mean, like, if you put one moment of trust in an organization like Facebook, or for that matter, freaking Google, you know, or any of these others, you know, look, yes, they've got terms and services and privacy policies that say they'll do certain things and won't do certain other things. But every single one of those privacy policies includes in it a statement that they can change the privacy policy whenever they want.
That's right.
You know, and so it means nothing. It means absolutely nothing. You know, so, this is the bottom line. If you are putting it out there on the internet, and that includes Facebook, then you are putting it out there. Any privacy you think you may have is an illusion. Because even in the case, for instance, where, you may not have your friends seeing it, but you're damn sure they're selling it for advertising targeting, if nothing else.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's completely out there. And so, like, you know, if it bothers you, don't do it, you know?
So if anybody's got any idea, okay, if it's a whole bunch of people just setting up fake profiles and some – I'm still trying to understand what the algorithm that Facebook is using to recommend friends. I don't understand it anymore. It used to be pretty straightforward. People who you knew, connections of people who you knew, that's straight up what it was. If somebody went and took their email address book and loaded it in, that's the way it worked. Or maybe it is that they're loading the email address books. Or if they're harvesting a whole bunch of spam emails, I guess. Oh.
I don't know. I don't know.
Oh, think about that. Now this makes sense.
Okay.
Think about this, right? Facebook would go in, and I was reading that where you would go and say it took your email account, found all, you know, it took all your contacts, and then it used that to try to, like, later suggest friends.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I was reading that apparently it did store those and then would recommend those people to the other person, right? So if I'm a spammer, I could go, shit, right, load up all the email addresses, tell it to look at it, create the page with the naked girl, boom, that's it.
Okay.
Okay, I may be onto something.
Maybe, I don't know. I mean, like I've told you before, I don't have this problem.
But I've been getting, I don't know how your spam level is on your,
I have a high level of spam on my regular email account.
I mean, I was guessing you have to.
Yes.
So, but you're saying that this is not happening to you, though.
No, this is not happening to me. It has never happened to me.
Okay. This is just, okay. It's just getting weirder.
Bottom line, folks, if you care about this shit, don't use Facebook. I mean, like, you can watch you can watch your other friends' stuff. But the second you interact with it, the second you hit the like button, the second you start commenting on people, the second you start doing anything, the second you click through on links, anything like that whatsoever, and guess what? It's making those connections. They're using those connections for things. At some point in the future, those connections may come out there. And I'll tell you another thing. I think I mentioned this the last time we talked about Facebook, but I'll mention again because it annoys me. When they bring up sponsored likes, okay?
Oh, God, yes.
Okay, now, you know, so-and-so, one of your friends, liked Company X, okay? Here's the thing. Normally, when you're looking at your timeline, you know, well, at least if you switch it to sort by most recent. Like, I don't know about you, but I always flip that to most recent all the time because it really... the most relevant or top hits or whatever it is really pisses me off because it means like they're using who knows what to determine what's theoretically important. But even if you sort it by date, those sponsored things come up whenever. The like, in general, the person that you were talking about did indeed at one point hit like on that company, but it's not recent necessarily.
Right.
It could be a like that they did years ago. Okay. Right. And so what it is, you know, Company X pays and says, okay, I want my likes highlighted this week. And they'll go and find anybody who ever liked their stuff anytime in history And if you have a connection to that person, they'll start highlighting it to you. And you know when that's most annoying? When the person is dead. Okay?
Yeah, I've had that happen.
I've had that happen a couple times, and it's like you suddenly see this message that so-and-so likes company whatever, and I'm like, but they died a year ago.
Yeah, I know.
And it's like, it's disturbing, because it makes you, you look at it, and you're like, oh my god, something's going on, is their account hacked, or, you know, maybe they weren't dead after all, I don't know, but like, there it is. And it's like, really? It's, come on. You know, at the very least, these things should be filtered for very recent activity. Okay, fine. My friend Bob hit like on some company. I understand you're going to tell it to me, but tell it to me when it happens in the context of my stream.
Right. Not like a year later. Yeah, I know, because that's what I just had recently happen. I can't remember what page it was. A friend of mine that died a year ago. I keep showing like, oh, yeah, so and so forth likes this. And I'm like, really? They're dead? Well, yeah. I went to the burial. I saw them go in, so I'm pretty sure he's dead.
Yeah, it's really freaking annoying. And I'll tell you, and of course they've started to insert the ads in mobile too. And it's not just the likes. There's also sponsored articles and things of various sort. And you know, of course, they want to make money. They're going to make money. They're going to be more and more intrusive with this stuff. And what... Hi, Alex. and what they're betting here, of course, is that people are so hooked on Facebook, and they won't mind the ads, and sometimes they'll click on the ads.
They're getting fucking annoying. I mean, especially, my thing is, like, right now, my timeline, I just see, like, it used to be, you know, filled with, like, my friends posting stuff and whatever, and now all I see is either those idiotic ads, or fucking people sending, like, old shit that they would forward by email, putting it on fucking Facebook.
What? Yeah.
Old crappy forwards.
Look at this. The little PowerPoint script of the scud and the light. I'm like, fuck you.
Yeah.
I didn't want it when it was email, and now I gotta look at this shit.
Look, I use Twitter to find out a lot of people forwarding interesting links. I have my RSS feeds. You know, I kind of want Facebook to be people telling me about their lives, if I'm gonna use it at all. I want their little pictures. I want their whatever. You know, but whenever I see these things with people, you know, forwarding the cute whatever or the what, you know, that's not what I have Facebook for.
No. And it's just annoying. It's just really fucking annoying.
Okay. Let's take a break and we'll move on. Our real topics for the day.
Yes.
We are going to talk about Tesla, the car, not the man, a little bit. There was an article in the New York Times this weekend that was interesting. There are a ton of Apple rumors going on, and we're sort of obliged to talk about some of them. I don't know about you, Yvonne. I think most of them are bullshit. But, you know...
I don't know. Let's go over them and let's see.
Bullshit in the sense of, we'll talk about it in a minute. And of course, we've got the sequester going on. So we'll take a break. We'll be back after this message, and then we'll talk about those things. We'll be right back. Yeah. This is Sam here with an opportunity for you. Yes, you heard me right, an opportunity. For you loyal listeners of Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, every once in a while, Yvonne can't make a show. And I do a solo show, which, you know, I think I do okay. But, you know, it's always interesting to have a second person to bounce off. And just in general, sometimes it's good to hear another voice. If you, yes, you, have some things to say about the kinds of things we usually talk about on Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, politics, current events, news, tech, then... drop me a line at abelsmay@abelsmay.com letting me know. And hey, I'll keep you in mind and maybe ask if you can join us sometime, either on a regular show with Yvonne if it's something particularly pressing that you maybe have an expertise on, or just, you know, hey, an opportunity to co-host when Yvonne is out. Who knows? Now, I am not guaranteeing that if you send me an email, you'll definitely get on the show, but let me know if you're interested and I'll keep you in mind. Thanks, and now... back to the show.
I know, he said it so well. I was like,
Yeah, right after I hit stop, Alex says, we'll be right back. You know, my timing is always perfect. You know, I've started to think I shouldn't even hit stop between the segments, because the reason we did that way back in the day was because the things used to crash all the time. Yes, Alex. Things used to crash all... Okay. You know, you're making it hard to talk. Anyway, we used to do it because things used to crash all the time and we'd lose stuff, so we'd stop and save every once in a while. But we haven't had to do that forever. So, you know, I could just keep rolling all the way through and just pause when we're going to insert the brakes, but whatever. Anyway, Alex is leaving now. Where were we? Tesla.
Well, Tesla. You know, that the other day, I was in Miami Beach a few weeks ago, and they actually put a Tesla okay, there's this area called Lincoln Mall Road, which is like a whole bunch of shops, okay?
Yep.
And inside the mall, like right beside, like across from a Starbucks, they put a Tesla store.
Yeah, there's a Tesla dealership a few blocks from where I work as well.
But it's a store. It's like, you know, it's like this thing where you go inside and they've got a couple of the cars and this configurator and this whole thing.
There's one of those in a mall near me too.
Yeah, it's just, well, I just thought that was kind of different and interesting. But okay, but you read an article, which I have not read.
Yeah, so,
okay.
And I was surprised because, you know, Yvonne's usually on top of all this car stuff.
I know, but I don't know. Today, I spent the whole day, I gotta be honest, I spent half the day working.
Ah, exciting. I did some work today, but Alex? Alex is back with a noisy toy. It's gears, they're spinning, and it's making noise and singing. Alex, can you take that downstairs? Okay, anyway, let me try to do this for a second, and meanwhile, I'm sending instant messages pleading for someone to... Here we go, okay. Anyway, so, Tesla. Here's the article. It was in the... there we go. It was in the New York Times on February 8th, which I guess was a few days ago. Friday? Anyway, it's Stalled Out on Tesla's Electric Highway by John Broder. And so the basic notion here is, you know, Tesla has installed a couple of fast chargers at rest stops along I-95.
Okay.
And by a couple, I mean two. One in Delaware and one in Connecticut.
Okay.
Okay, so the idea here was, you know, theoretically, you know, the guy could start out, where was he starting from? Anyway, it doesn't matter. He was going to drive up and down I-5, stop at the chargers and test it out, because this is the first time they've installed them on a major highway on the East Coast. They've done a few on the West Coast in various places. And because the basic notion here is, you know, like if you're using this for commuting or something, you plug it in at home every night, right? And you have like a trickle charger that takes all night to charge the day.
And it's got a 300-mile range. So, I mean, look, I mean, unless you're going cross country, I mean, you know, you should be driving back and forth. You should be, if you plug it in every night, you should never run out of juice.
Right. And you plug it in and it lasts, it takes all night to charge it, but, you know, you're not driving anywhere. You're sleeping. So,
right.
So it's good for that local kind of stuff, but you know, the problem is if you are going to go on like a road trip,
That's a problem. You
need places to charge the damn thing, and you probably need places to charge it fast as opposed to plugging in for 8 hours. Right.
Right.
And so they add these superchargers that in theory, like, charge the thing up in like half an hour or something. So the idea is you go to the rest stop, you go have lunch or whatever, and it charges while you're doing that, and then you come back and you drive your car away. Okay, so the bottom line, this didn't work out too well.
What happened?
So, you know, I recommend everybody read the article. I'll try to get the summary points. So he starts out, the idea is of the supercharger is it'll charge enough for 150 miles in 30 minutes and a full charge in an hour.
That's pretty damn good.
Yeah, so...
In concept.
And so he started from suburban Washington, D.C. with a full charge, And driving at normal highway speeds, he got to the Delaware charging dock just fine, with about half of the energy remaining.
Okay.
And he went to lunch and blah, blah, blah. Cool. He's like, this is awesome so far. But then, as he crossed into New Jersey, like 15 miles later, he noticed that the range was dropping faster than the miles were.
Okay.
And so he started doing, Tesla has these range maximization guidelines. So like if you're worried about running out of power, basically you do all kinds of things to minimize the power. And
okay.
And so what is that? Turn the climate control down all the way. Drive less than the speed limit with cruise control on. Now, so here's the thing. Turning off the climate control on the East Coast in February.
It's quite cold. It could be get quite annoying.
So he mentioned the temperature was in the 30s, right? And so, and he starts calling Tesla, okay? And he takes a break in Manhattan. It says he's got 79 miles left. The charging station in Connecticut is 73 miles away.
Okay? Oh, God.
So... And so one of the things we're noticing here, by the way, and this is one reason why Tesla started out in California, the batteries are less efficient and don't last as long when the temperature drops. Because for one thing, there is load if you use the heater and stuff. But even if you don't use the heater,
it's just that the power just doesn't the temperature affects. The how much power they hold, I guess.
Right. So the guy at Tesla is like, don't worry. Even if the display hits zero, there's still a few miles of cushion. We built it that way, so there's a little buffer, blah, blah, blah. And okay. And he says at that point, the car was flashing red letters, recharge now. Okay.
That's never good. Okay.
So he actually manages to get there. You know,
he did get there.
He gets to the Milford, Connecticut thing by you know, driving with 30 degrees, whatever. And so, you know, he goes and gets some coffee while it's doing it. And you know, he mentions at this point in the story that, you know, if this is what Tesla calls the road trip problem, it needs some work. But
he didn't get stranded. He did, which is, you know, a plus. He wasn't pushing the car.
Yes. So, I mean, you know, he had to drive the like last 100 miles, like shivering and in the cold, but you know, hey, you know,
hey, I guess that could be, it.
You know, this is exactly what you pay $60,000 for a car for.
No. Well, depending on what model, I was looking at one, like right now at the dealership, you're talking, you could be paying $100,000.
Yeah. It depends on the model. The low end is 60.
Okay. Yeah.
So while he's getting the coffee, when he continues the drive, he lets it charge whatever, it's up to $185, which is, you know, basically he was going to drive back the next morning, to Manhattan to turn it in the Tesla dealership in Manhattan. So he starts driving back. He drives 79 miles. When he parked the car, it had gone down from 185 down to 90. Okay, which was, you know, and then, you know, he spends the night there, and because he was going to spend the night somewhere and then drive the rest of the way.
Okay.
Overnight, while he slept, it dropped from 90 miles left to 25 miles left.
Whoa! Well, I guess you can't completely shut off that damn car.
Well, because it's just sitting there, and apparently...
And it was just draining the battery all slowly.
Well, but also the temperature, because it was cold night in Connecticut, and blah, blah, blah. And so he calls Tesla in the morning, and they say he needs to condition the battery to restore the energy. And what does condition mean?
That means, run it all the way down, and then charge it.
No, it means sit in the car for half an hour with the heat on low, okay? And apparently he says there's now like some sort of mobile app where you can do this remotely without sitting in the car. But anyway, for him, it meant sitting in the car for half an hour in the cold while the thing theoretically warms up. After he finished that, it said there were 19 miles left, which was not enough to get back to the charging station in Connecticut.
Oh, God.
Okay. So the Tesla people found, he called them up, and they found him like a charging station at a utility. Yes, hi. Yes, I know there are more gears that are missing. I'm not sure where they are. Anyway, so they found a charging station that was only 11 miles away. It wasn't a public charging station. It wasn't a Tesla charge, but they made arrangements, and he drives there. And so he finds the necessary adapter. He plugs it in, and he like walks to a nearby diner kind of place to wait while it charges up. Okay, so. While he's there, it charges really slowly because this isn't one of the supercharger stations.
Right,
it's just,
right.
You know, I mean, it's more than a regular plug, but it's, you know, so he got it up, but it never got as high as the number of miles left to go back to Milford. So he drives around and, you know, they've told him to go slow to maximize. So he's going at 45 miles an hour. and the thing, and so he calls them up, and they find like another charging station for him that's 5 miles away, and they're like, go here, and then the Tesla is like, car is shutting down, and so he has to coast to a stop on an exit ramp somewhere, and then they tow him back to the charging station. But there's even more there, because like the car, when it's out of power, the brakes are on as a safety measure.
Oh, Jesus.
So they couldn't just, you know, the tow truck.
They're looking at something.
I know you're looking.
They're looking at blue gears again from the gears.
Okay, you can take it with you. Take it.
Well, I will say this. I had that happen to me once. I had this truck that I had that the transmission seized up. And it would not leave out of park. So they had to drag the car. Yeah,
and that's basically what they had to do. They had to drag the car onto a flatbed.
Onto the flatbed. I mean, they just had to just freaking like just drag it on.
Yeah.
No other way.
And so, you know, so they finally gets into Milford 5 hours out after he'd left the place where he spent the night. It should have taken him less than an hour. he gets there 5 hours later. They charge him up all the way, and then he drives back to Manhattan with no problems. But basically, he came out of this saying, this wasn't fun.
Well, you know, it's just, look, here's the thing about electric cars as they stand, like, right now. The range is no good.
Yeah.
It takes too long to charge.
Yep.
Okay? It's... But honestly, even the environmental benefit to me at best is questionable depending on what the source of the energy on the back end is.
Well, and the manufacturing to create the batteries is notoriously dirty.
Right. You know, I mean, if we're going and, like, let's say we're fucking, like, burning coal to generate this electricity, what the hell's the good of this crap?
There apparently is still some net plus, but it's not as high as you'd think it would be.
But I would think, like, for example, I don't know, you take a small diesel car that goes, maybe even, let's say, a small biodiesel running car that you could get like 50, 60 on a sedan, you could get 50 miles per gallon on it using biodiesel is far more eco-friendly than this.
Yeah, well, look, there are calculations that are done of this, and I'm not sure where the balance off. It really depends on sort of how much you count and how you count it and blah, blah, blah. And there are all kinds of variables. So it's really unclear is the bottom line. It's unclear what the end benefit really is. The best analysis I've seen says it is, even when you account for everything, it's still slightly better than the alternative. But the main thing here is the technology is still really immature.
Right.
At this point,
it is. It just truly is.
And like we said at the beginning, if you're using this to commute back and forth to work and you come home every night it's probably fine.
Listen, but like I said, look, if the power on the back end, say I go and I get this electric car and say all the energy is made, say, with old natural gas and nuclear power on the back end, then hell yeah, I'm doing a great job on like minimizing my CO2 output. No question about it. Okay. But if that's not the case, it's just a whole bunch of fucking like coal burning fire stations, and all of a sudden I add all these cars and I make them all burn more coal because I'm freaking plugging in my car, then I'm not really helping shit.
Yeah, I mean, but look, the bottom line though is like, look, there are few limited use cases where, okay, this might make sense to somebody, but even so, right now the market is still the people who are willing to pay a premium to try to be environmentally good.
Well, I'd like, tell you it's what, not, it's I, not around competitive. Here in my neighborhood, there's a number of people with not the Tesla, the other, the sedan, the big one. Oh gosh, what's the other electric car?
You mean the DM one?
Oh god, the
Volt, the DM one,
the expensive one. It's $100,000. It's big and swoopy. Not the Tesla, not the Leaf.
The Tesla sports car instead of the Tesla sedan?
No. Well, I've seen the Tesla sports car. No, but that's not the one I'm talking about. It's this other
Whatever. There's something.
And that car is $100,000, okay?
This is part of my point. Like, right now, this is available for the
Fisker. The Fisker.
Fisker. See, I've never even heard of that one. You know, I've never even heard of that one, but
the Fisker Karma is it's a sedan. It's far swoopier looking than the Tesla. But like I said, I mean, it's $100,000. You know, I mean, it's expensive. I mean,
yeah. I just grabbed some pictures of it. Okay, I see it. But look, it's not ready to. Electric cars are not ready to really compete with gas cars yet. But, you know, look, the thing is, look at the progress that has been made just in the last 5 years. You know,
I agree.
Five, ten years,
everything, the biggest problem, as you mentioned, even the pollution that it causes, is the batteries. I mean, and even like right now, we're talking about this battery. This car, I think the Tesla uses lithium ion batteries. I mean, you see all the problems that Boeing is having with the batteries on a 787 that are lithium ion. They're trying to use them in order to be able to reduce weight and squeeze more power and do certain things to save energy, and they're having all sorts of problems with the damn things.
Well, I mean, and look, you know, but compared, you know, 5 years ago, the best electric cars out there were still not much better than a golf cart.
Agreed.
And you know, now they're actually pretty kick-ass. They have very limited situations where they could be used as a primary car. They can't completely replace a gasoline car, but if your use of a car fits within those parameters, or you're rich enough to have your Tesla for the one thing and your other car for something else, then hey, cool. It's getting there. And the trend, though, here's the thing, you know, because of these sort of test platforms, and I'm calling them test platforms, obviously they're really selling them commercially, but through these processes, the technology is developing and improving, and maybe in another 5 years, they really will be competitive. I don't know.
It's possible. I mean, I'll tell you that I've been surprised a number of, for whatever reason over here, the Karma has been, you know, that Fisker has been quite popular. So, surprised. I mean, I got surprised by the number of them that I've seen on the road. So,
okay. So let's take a break. Let's move on to something else, and we'll be back, and we'll talk about what was next on the agenda. Oh, Apple. Yeah,
Apple.
good old Apple. We'll be back in a little bit.
Ready for the test, Dracula?
I'm ready, Frankenstein. Then let us begin.
Creepy Classics celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
Okay, here we are. Exciting, exciting.
Exciting, exciting, exiting. Exiting or exciting?
We're not exiting yet.
Oh, it's exciting. Bit. Okay, exciting. All right, I'm getting confused. Yes. Anyway, so Apple rumors.
Whole crap. I mean, we've got the usual old Apple TV one is still around, meaning a television, not the little box they sell now.
You're not making a fucking TV. I just cannot. I would be just absolutely shocked if they, I mean, if they gave, they gave a, they came out with a TV. No way. What is all this bullshit about an iWatch anyway?
This is the most recent one. There's new curved glass and blah, blah, blah. You could make a watch. And basically what the rumors have, or you remember the old, they changed it since then, but they, for a while, they had the iPod Nano that was a little square.
Yeah.
And people were actually like selling watch bands that would attach to that thing because people were wearing it on their wrists.
Uh-huh.
And there's been like a number of like Kickstarter projects and things to build smart watches, the Pebble and stuff like that. And so the idea is you'd have basically an iOS device, but it would be more, probably more like the iPod than the iPhone, but that would sort of wrap around your wrist I don't know what. I mean, I presume it would have music, and they talked about maybe controlling it with Siri, and I don't know. It seems kind of goofy to me, but
does this sound like just a whole bunch of fucking bullshit?
Here's what I think is happening. Like I said earlier, I think most of these are bullshit, but here's what I think is happening. I think Apple has a group somewhere within its bowels that's constantly thinking up out-of-the-box ideas and sort of bouncing them off the wall. And they might even build an occasional prototype. 95% of these or more will never see the light of day as a real product. But there's somebody, I would not doubt 1 minute that there's somebody somewhere inside Apple that's saying, hey, could we
Why don't
do
we
this?
Make a watch?
Well, can we do this in an around-the-wrist form factor, in a wearable form factor? It's not really so much a watch. That's a misnomer. It's not like this thing is going to be a watch. It's just going to be on your wrist, and it's basically a small iPod with a small screen that happen to wear it on your wrist, and maybe they throw in some other features to it. Maybe you can check your email on it. Maybe you can send text. I don't know. But like, and I could see some possible utility for that, but I'm frankly not quite sure why you would get that if you already have like an iPhone or something. But okay, maybe some people just like wearing the thing on their wrist. I don't know.
Well, I will say this.
But here's the
if you came up with something, you see, I keep thinking, for example, exercise, I use this watch for exercise, okay?
Yeah.
Measures your heart rate and stuff and whatever. And there are some apps like right now come for the iPhone that if you go to my gym, you can actually plug your iPhone in and it will log the exercise that you do on the machines.
Right.
Okay. And there's a couple of different devices like that. So if you think about it a little bit, I'm like thinking somebody did exercises, right? The iPhone, I mean, I see people that you do put an armband to use the iPhone to exercise.
Yep.
Well, let's face it, they're not it the most. It's okay, but I mean, it's not as convenient.
No,
as
and look,
device.
I can imagine
if you had a device that was on your wrist that you could do your heart rate monitoring and all this stuff, monitor your exercise, you listen to music. I guess I could see how that could work.
Yeah, I can see some use cases here. But what I think, this is one of those ideas where some, you know, I'm sure someone inside Apple is bouncing it around, testing technology, thinking about the idea. I bet you it's not something that's going to come to market.
But it's a niche product, even at best, is my point.
Yes,
I mean,
yes.
I don't see how it
well, I mean,
be
but,
huge.
But, it, I
of
mean,
course, I kept saying that the fucking tablet was just never going to work. But
no,
you know,
but at the same sort of niche thing, I mean, so's the iPod Shuffle, and they make it. I mean,
right.
So's the iPod Nano, and they make it. I mean, what on the iPod line, so far, unlike the iPhone line, and we'll talk about some of those iPhone rumors in a second, they have differentiated. You've got the old big hard drive based one for carrying like a billion songs. You've got three different sizes of regular ones. You've got with screen, without screen, you know, and so you've got all kinds of things to fit all those niches. You want one without a screen that you just use for exercise that you, fine, they've got that. You've got one that's more capable than that and holds a little bit more, they've got that. You want one that's actually an iOS device, they've got that, you know, so maybe, you know, an extension of that strategy for, you know, sort of, you know, the, just, hey, it's another form factor for the iPod.
Yeah. No. Makes sense. I can understand that.
Yeah, I'm not sure we'll actually see this thing, but, you know, who knows? Google's coming out with the damn glasses, so.
Yeah, I know. Stupid glasses. I don't know. Glasses. I don't want fucking glasses, like, with that shit.
You know, I would try it.
You would, really? I guess I would try it, but I just don't see that I would want that. Okay, I'm trying to think. Okay, I'm driving and I got glasses displaying information. I don't know.
That doesn't sound safe.
Exactly my point.
I mean, okay, maybe if you were specifically displaying a heads-up display with your GPS directions, but it's directly overlaid on the road instead of on a screen that you look
now
at.
That sounds cool, but you know, they've got cars right now that do that, by the way, just so you know. BMW's latest GPS built-in does do that now. It shows you, like, it'll show you on the heads-up, it'll show the arrow, and it'll point to the fucking exit, like, itself. Yep.
So, that kind of stuff I could see, and I understand, like, when you're not driving, the whole idea of, like, you know, the science fiction versions of this, where you have it have facial recognition, and you walk up to some guy, and it looks them up in a database, and reminds you of the guy's name, and their title, and maybe the last time you emailed them, and all of this information just sort of comes up real quick, and you're like, ah, yes, hi, Bob. I could see that kind of stuff being useful.
Well, no, I guess so, since I always forget everybody anyway, that could be useful, but but yet at the same time, I mean, let's face it, we're distracted enough with a fucking phone that we just go and, like, look at. You imagine if you're fucking glasses, you're walking around and just reading information all the time? I don't know. I think I'll get a fucking headache.
Yeah, I mean, there's clearly some things they'd have to work on to make that. I'm very interested to hear when the reviews start coming out from real people using these, which, you know.
The first guy that gets into a major fucking accident because they were wearing the fucking glasses while driving, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, oh, Jesus, you know.
But that's why Google's working on the self-driving car.
Well, yeah, so you have to finish a self-driving car first.
Anyway, back to Apple. So the other one is the rumor of the big iPhone, and the more I'm hearing more rumors about this, and what it's being tied to, and you made predictions about this in the prediction show, is actually a not what it's looking like is not, you know, take like an iPhone 5 and make it a lot bigger. Bigger screen, higher res, blah, 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 more screen real estate. It's not looking like somewhere between an iPhone 5 and an iPad mini. It's looking instead like taking the iPhone 5 and just making it physically bigger in order to, A, make it cheaper. They're talking about making it out of cheaper parts that don't have to be as fault tolerant because they're not as small. And just blow up the same resolution. So it's the same resolution with a little bit bigger pixels to give you that bigger screen real estate, not more resolution, but more screen real estate to sort of go after, because again, that'll be cheaper because it's a cheaper display. But also there's some people that just, you know, the iPhone 5 screen is just too small. They don't like seeing the text that small. They want it a little bit bigger. And, you know, this certainly goes after, you know, people who are getting older and their eyes aren't as good. And there's also been rumored that this is targeting developing countries because they'll be able to sell them a lot cheaper. Same functionality, just a little bit bigger, a little bit cheaper. I don't know. I mean, it seems like if they were going to do it, I can see this approach working. But, you know, and maybe Apple's approach has changed. Apple has never before had their strategy being go after the low end, which is what this sounds like.
I mean, I get that, but I'm thinking, not while Steve has been in charge, but yeah, however, if you do think about it, I'm trying to remember, like, the evolution of certain of the products over the years. You know, first he came out with a titanium MacBook, right? And then he came out with lower-end, like, iBooks, right?
Yeah.
And then when the iPod first came out, it was a very expensive one. But then a whole bunch of cheaper, smaller devices came out.
Remember those first iBooks? Not only they were cheaper, they were plastic instead of metal.
Yeah.
And this is the kind of rumors I'm hearing about this phone, is instead of being like glass and metal, it's going to be plastic and bigger and, you know, lower quality screen. But, you know, but with all this together, they can drop the price point down significantly and get it out there for a lot of other people who, you know, iPhones are out of the picture right now. And, you know, we've talked before about, you know, Android's big niche. You know, one of several, but the big niche is the people who are more price conscious and are like, why would we spend all that money on an iPhone? This thing does all that stuff and it's cheaper.
Right.
So, you know, make an iPhone that's half the cost of the current bottom line, and I'm talking unsubsidized prices, and then maybe you're set. I mean, and you can even sell it with a pay-as-you-go plan.
But the other part that you mentioned is the part about the easier manufacture.
Yeah.
Okay, look. One of the reasons why Apple failed to sell as many devices as they could have in the last quarter was simply because they couldn't make them fast enough. They just couldn't. And so the reality is that if you make a certain series of devices that are easier to manufacture to a certain extent, not that you don't make the high end product, but you also make others that are easier to manufacture and sell. It may make it, you know, that it can sell more. So I think it's a balancing act between the two. So
yeah, I think they have to be very careful here. I understand the temptation to go after the lower end, but their brand, the Apple brand, at least since Jobs got back, has always been about sort of high quality. Like the
I agree, but
the comparison,
it doesn't mean that it's lower in quality. It just means that it may have less expensive components. Just think titanium PowerBook and the iBook.
Yeah.
The titanium, titanium, everything cool, whatever. But heck, the other one was made out of plastic. It was certainly not as expensive or sophisticated as the other one. It didn't mean that it was crap.
No,
but
it wasn't.
It wasn't, you know, that
modern. Yeah. I mean, you know, there is the argument that they already do offer the low end. I mean, you can get an iPhone with $0 up front with a contract.
That's just getting
two generations old.
Yeah. It's the same thing that Samsung does. I mean, let's face it. Samsung's selling the previous generations of Galaxy phones at substantially cheaper discounts than buying a Galaxy S3 as well.
Yeah. Hey, well, we'll see. So I've got one more rumor that I have on my mind. It's actually less of a rumor as, you know, people are just chatting about it. But any more that we haven't covered that had on your mind?
No.
So the one other, and like I said, this isn't actually a rumor. Nobody is saying that Apple is actually considering this. But I saw an online discussion that was kind of interesting to watch, and both sides of the argument were put out fairly well, but was, you know, basically... Can Apple do what Dell did and go private?
No.
And is there any reason why they would want to?
The answer is no and no. I mean, it's just too much. I mean, a $500 billion leverage buyout? No way. It's not going to happen. I mean, let's put it this way. I mean, Dell's leverage buyout ranks amongst the biggest ever done, and it's for $24 billion. I don't see it. No. and there is, honestly, listen.
I mean,
I got to tell you something. The Dell buyout, as it stands right now, there's only one good thing about it to only one person.
Michael Dell
will probably make a ton of money on it. That's about it. The shareholders have already gotten screwed over the years with the dropping stock price, but I mean, there is no other advantage other than Michael Dell's going to make a deal, is going to make a killing, and that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, part of the arguments that were put out there was, and they all sounded kind of BS to me, but the argument was put out that, you know, this gives him more flexibility to try to restructure the company in ways that will be competitive again, agree. Blah, blah, blah.
I mean, I really don't. I mean, a lot of this restructuring that he's been doing has been focused on purchasing all these other companies, okay, in order to grow the Dell services and enterprise portfolio, okay? Hey, if you go and you borrow like $15 billion, $20 billion to do this damn buyout, okay, it's going to be very difficult for them to continue to do acquisitions like that, okay? That's the first thing. So I mean, what? He's planning on like downsizing significantly the PC business? Well, if he does that now, I mean, I don't see any shareholders stopping him from doing it right now.
The market's kind of doing it for him anyway.
Right. So I don't get it. I really don't get it. I really don't.
Yeah.
Well, I do get it. Michael Dell's going to make a killing.
So back to Apple. Assuming they're not going to use their hoard of cash to buy themselves, they still have a big, huge bucket load of cash, and they've started giving some dividends, but they're still relatively small, and they're still growing that cash hoard. It's not shrinking. Ideas what's going on there?
Look, I mean, there's all this talk about a whole bunch of people putting pressure on Apple to do something with the cash, give it out to stockholders, do something, whatever. I mean, look. If it were me, and I'm Tim Cook, the reason I'm thinking about that cash, I'd be thinking acquisitions. I got to be honest with you. I mean, and what the strategy is and where you want to head to the future. I mean, look, what would stop you from going and say, oh, I don't know, you decide to, I don't know.
Well, I mean, the things that have come up in the past are Apple buying a movie company, Apple buying a phone company, Apple, whatever, like doing that kind of thing where, the back and forth with the carriers is a pain in the ass with the iPhones.
Buy a carrier.
Yeah.
Buy T-Mobile. Fuck it. You can buy it right now. They can just write a check and they could own T-Mobile in 2 seconds. Boom.
And the same kind of thing that when they talk about like pressure with the movie studios or the music industry or whatever not getting what they want on iTunes, fuck it, we'll buy Universal, whatever.
I mean, they could do that too. I mean, but of course, then you get other antitrust issues and other stuff and whatever and whatnot.
But I mean, fundamentally, just having that there gives them a shitload of flexibility, and it also gives like downturn insurance. Like, let's say the next big product they put out like blows, they fuck it up completely, they start losing all of the cachet they've gotten over the last few years. Having that cash gives them the ability.
It's a big security blanket. Yeah,
it potentially means they could go years with like
duds
and still be healthy and able to do the next one and the next one and try again and eventually come back. I mean, they've got enough in the bank, that they could just decide. I mean, they could say, okay, we're taking a 5-year break. We'll be back.
Right.
As
a stockholder, I'd be upset. But anyway, I think that the point is that I think that is the reason why they hold that much cash and why most tech companies hold a lot of cash. I mean, tech companies are very conservative with their cash. Cisco, Microsoft, everybody.
You do not want to be in a position where if your next release sucks, you're screwed.
Yeah, I think that's it. So I don't know. I think that, if you're thinking about what to do with the money, I would be thinking, what is next? Okay, great. So we've got tablets, we've got phones, we got iPhone, we got iPad. In the big scheme, what would be next, if you think about it, in a big technology breakthrough?
Well, apparently the other thing we were talking about earlier, every once in a while, like Steve Jobs was like, I'd like to make an Apple car,
Yeah.
So who knows?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, is it something like that? Is it something let out in left field? I mean, I don't know. Google's making cars.
Well, they're not actually making the cars.
Well, they're making the technology for it to drive itself, but pretty much close to it.
They install that technology in an existing car, though, but yeah.
Yeah, but it's, you know, basically you're almost making a fucking car. So, I don't know. Speaking of which,
and this is a complete tangent, but you know the Google Earth cars with the big, like, ball on top?
Yeah, I've seen those.
And not the Google Earth, the Street View cars. And I've seen them driving around, and, you know, they've got this thing where in certain areas where, you know, they're trying to expand in more and more areas, so they've got these things, they've got a human-worn version of this thing for, like, map, for two things. One, they're starting to map the inside of some buildings, but they also use it in areas that are less accessible by car. So they're mapping like national parks and trails and third world countries outside of drivable areas, all kinds of stuff. And so basically this is just this big harness and they've got that big ball of cameras sticking up over your head.
And, oh, that is so nice.
And I'm going
to
date myself way, way back here, but the immediate picture that came into my mind was Al Franken wearing the satellite dish on Saturday Night Live.
Yes.
During the Gulf War.
Yes.
The first Gulf War. Anyway, for anybody listening who doesn't remember that, I'm just sorry. I'm old. What can I say? Yeah. Anyway, let's take another break. We're running long, but we got one more. Yeah,
we got one more thing, or we want to wrap up and talk about that next week since we are run. I'm looking at the time.
Okay, let's wrap it up. We'll save the sequester for next week. It'll be more timely anyway because we'll be running up against the deadline, or at least closer to it than we are now. So let's wrap this up. Thank you for joining us at Curmudgeon's Corner. As usual, we appreciate it when you share this. And by the way, I noticed at least one person shared this on Facebook in the last week who wasn't you, Yvonne. You've done it occasionally too. So I appreciate that. Share us. Tell your friends.
Well, I try to do it every week, but sometimes I forget.
Email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com with questions, comments, thoughts, all of that kind of stuff. In the meantime, have a nice week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.